Morning, Ariel. Thanks.
Ariel, again, we will start the meeting shortly. So just wait for a few more moments. Thank you.
Ariel, are we ready to start the meeting? All right. I welcome you to the part one of the ALAC working session. We'll start off with reports from working groups, and an hour and a quarter for these. We won't take quite that long, but start. The first one is accessibility.
Thank you. And I'm over here just to confuse everybody. I'm talking from the bleachers. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. And we have literally, quite literally, just wrapped up our face-to-face meeting from the previously known, I feel like a bit like the artist previously known as Prince, the working group previously known as the Accessibility Working Group of At Large, and the currently known, which is one of the things I would like to put in today's report, Mr. Chairman, Cross-Community Committee on Accessibility, now an ICANN-wide cross-community event. Well, perhaps adventure might be the appropriate. We had a far too short, but less, by the time we got about 15 minutes into it, well-attended meeting. Doesn't seem to matter what time you start a meeting. It's always halfway through the meeting by the time the right critical mass of people get in the room. As ever, the fabulous support from ICANN staff and senior staff who are running particular parts of the outreach engagement, media materials and website work were on board with us and reported to us about where they're taking things like the web accessibility work, and I'm delighted to report to you and confirm that the new at-large web space, thank you Ariel for doing the lion's share on all of this, we really do appreciate that, but what's very exciting from an accessibility point of view is that that's going to be taken through as the pilot or the test piece for the wider ICANN-wide web accessibility work. So ours will be, as is only right, the first amongst many web spaces brought up to speed. If I can draw your attention just briefly to our new home, which is showing on the right-hand side. Unfortunately, it's not something being viewed by my remote participants. I apologise for that. But in a perfect world, there should be a URL in the chat space, or indeed it looks like some clever person is going to fix that. But we are... there we go. Excellent. Thank you very much. You can now see it in remote. We have a new wiki web space, which is the under the cross-community tab. It is beta, and it is beta not as yet released. However, if you are passionate about making sure things have good accessibility and are highly usable, let either Sylvia, myself, or Ariel know, and we will make sure that you get access to that not yet public space to help us work with Jeff and some of the talent here within the ICANN staff resources that we have, and that we will be able to make this an excellent spot. Just quickly roll down. I know you'll be shocked and horrified to realise that I'm in just about every photo. We need to change that because we want to have it as interactive and very video-based, although I make a great video, a video-based piece. We've got our mission and objectives. We've immediately looked at the fact that this is far too long. This is a collaborative, collegial space. They will still exist, but we'll just hide them on a third level page somewhere. For the general RALO leadership, however, Mr. Chairman, I would very much like to recommend that at regular intervals, the RALO leadership at this page and look at the resources and reading materials that we will have on this page, because it will help accessibility matters in their parts of the world as well. And, of course, because this is a open and very welcoming group, we would like to hear from any of the ALSs or individual members, RALO leadership themselves, if they have an issue or a matter that they would like us to discuss forward into our work plan that we are engaged with developing with ICANN staff. Chairman, we are no longer really a or the ALAC. we have become something else. So I would suggest to you that in future meetings, you may liaison relationship with this cross community, perhaps have us agendered then for up as required when there is thrown away from being an ad hoc work group per se or cross community. But I do, as it was born from our loins, it is something we should take a particular interest in and watch the child grow and hopefully not stumble and fall. That, I give it back to you.
I suspect you should be using the born from our loins, not applicable to all of us. I congratulate you on the child leaving home, and I think the concept of a liaison is fine. We should talk about the details. And may I suggest that you offer to each RALO an opportunity for you or somebody to present at one of their RALO monthly meetings in the very near future.
Cheryl Langdon, off the record, Mr. Chairman, it would be our pleasure. Sylvia is one of the key staff members working with this group, and she also has a job of interacting with the RALOs, so she's the girl for that job.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Comments? Applause? Then we go on to the next one. And we have the capacity building working group with Tijani Benjamin.
Thank you, Alan. Tijani speaking. I will not take a lot of time, Alan, because I think it is useless to list the webinars we did. Just to tell you that we did a series of webinars in 2014. 2015, we did two parts. The first part was gone. We already did it. The second part, we are doing it now. We have only one remaining webinar. And in the total, we will have had 12 webinars this year. So the second part was focused on the transition and accountability. We had a webinar on that, and especially on the input of at-large in this process. Also, we had a webinar on ICANN working groups, either at-large working groups or community working groups. We will have a webinar on the website, ICANN website, large website, in fact. And our webinars were for knowledge, for information, and also to exercise our ALSs on the tools to be used in our daily works. We had a webinar also on policy development, and we had two parts of it. One is at-large policy development, and the second, I think, very important, is GNSO policy development. We don't think that the capacity building will be restricted to webinars. It's the easiest way and the less the costs, the less needing money. We have project to use all kind of tools possible building, and we ask it for the help. I can learn, and Jeff very kindly is helping us. Now all our webinars are put on the platform, voice and presentations, so that if you didn't have the opportunity to attend the webinar, you can go and retrieve it. And in the future, those webinars will be organized as a course on the I Can Learn. We also improved our evaluation system. Before, we had a sheet that people fill in after the webinar, tell how they feel it, how they find it. The experience show that people are not really filling in those sheets. So Ariel very kindly proposed to have something on the Adobe Connect, and I will give her the floor to explain more or less what kind of evaluation it is done like this.
Thank you, Tijani. This is Ariel. And for the record, to improve the efficiency of receiving feedback, we implemented the survey pod in the Adobe Connect that the participants can give their feedback immediately after attending the webinar. And we only have four questions, including how satisfied you are with the webinar, how expert do you think the speakers are experts in their topic, questions like that. And then after this meeting, we will work with I will work with Terry and Gisela to synthesize all the survey, the results, and back to the group, what's the feedback, general feedback is like.
Also, in the last webinar, we had a new new point that we added, which is the quiz, and the, those are questions related to the presentation, and it was very successful. I was very happy about that, and I think it is helpful for us to see if people followed the presentation or not. I said that the webinars are not the only tool to be used, and I proposed for FY16 program for capacity building on site for the regions where we never go. I mean, for example, islands, small islands in the Pacific, Caribbean islands, and also the small countries in Africa. Unfortunately, the budget wasn't adopted. I hope it will be adopted this year, and I think it is something that we have to do. It is a necessity because, yes, we are doing capacity building, but also we are doing capacity building online. It is not as efficient as if you go to people, especially for those who never saw you. Thank you. Is there any question? Alan.
Yeah, not a question, just an observation. Although I support the concept of remote capacity building that you're talking about, we're never going to be funded to go to every island, nor are we likely funded to move people from many islands to one. So it's something that I think should be in our toolkit. I don't think we can pretend that it's going to solve the generic problem identified. It's just something to at least try, see how, to what extent it helps, perhaps to get more general funding or adopt or implement it. I think it really needs to be flagged, as it was the first time, as a pilot to test the concept as opposed to solving the problem.
Thank you. So, well, I'm not sure if my question is exact capacity building or not, but there's one thing is I've noticed that this time to here, we have about over 20 or maybe 30 people from China. And of course, I invite them to come over to tomorrow morning's AP Railo's monthly meeting. Of course, well, they would certainly like to come, but then they ask me a question. Is if I come, how would that benefit my organization, either that registrar, or, say, other entity? And also, yesterday we talked about funding. China, say, nowadays, does have quite a few very sizable, huge internet companies. For example, I talked with a lady from Tencent. I think according to capitalization, is the number 5 in the world right now. Okay, they've very deep pocket. I talked about, well, whether would you like to fund some kind of ALAC or say AP Railo activities? Yeah, sure, of course, we would love to. First of all, please give me a story that I can sell to the senior management. So, well, I would take this opportunity try to get answers to these two questions. One is how would we be able to benefit the ALSs or whoever, right? And secondly, say how to get a story that so. As soon as I get the story, we get a story, I see fundings will be coming. Thank you.
Two things. First of all, it's not only the benefit is in both directions. You know, certainly, it may well help some of these organizations to have local people who are involved in our process. You know, a lot of them have advisory councils. They have, you know, various boards and stuff where having people on the ground to talk to has some value. Certainly, the people we're looking at that create ALSs in various regions are often the people who are most interested in doing innovative things. Again, it's a bidirectional benefit that the company may be able to supply funds or equipment or something. And the other, the people are a source of, to be honest, free labor using perhaps their products or their advertising. So it's a bi-directional thing. And as, you know, since China happens to be in the Asia-Pacific region, you have the most dynamic group of any of our relos that is using these kind of things. So talk to your colleagues, the esteemed Lady Sirenush. Sorry, we're going to keep on doing this to you for the rest of the meeting. And some of these things don't work, but some do. And if we can make a few of them work, then it's good. So you're in a strong position. And I'll stop talking. It's not my meeting right now. Back to Tijani.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Alan. I would like to remind you that we already did on site during the ICANN meetings capacity building for some regions, for most of the regions. So it is something that we did, and it is something that we intend to do in the future. It is a problem of funding, and it's a problem of will of the region leaders. But it is something that, for example, for Africa, every time we have a General Assembly face-to-face, we will have a program for Africa. Coming back to your comment, Alan, I will keep, and as at the beginning, when I asked for a face-to-face capacity building for Africa, it was almost impossible, and then it happened. I will do the same. Okay, I will give the floor to Gareth and then Alberto. Gareth, please.
Thank you, Tijani. Gareth Bruin, Nerala Chair. And I want to respond directly to something that you said, Tijani, about remote islands. As North American Chair, I actually reached out directly to specifically organizations in remote islands that are in the North American sphere, Guam, American Samoa, Pago Pago, a few other places. What's that? We'll talk about the new fees later. And I had no problem. I had no problem identifying organizations that were interested in internet policy. I had no problem contacting these groups. What they had a problem with was the ALS application. They had difficulties with it. And also, they were really confused by ICANN as an organization and how it actually would benefit them. That was no problem getting a hold of them. Difficulties bringing them in.
Thank you, Garth. I will lay on our ALSs from those regions and those islands. We will go. We will not go blindly. We will go with contacts there. Otherwise, we will not go. That's clear. I am sorry, Maureen raised her hand before everyone, but I didn't see her. So I apologize, and I will give her the floor.
Thank you, Tijani. Yes, often overlooked. I just wanted to slightly reinforce too the importance of the synergies that actually can be utilized to support what you're actually saying, Tijani. As an ISOC. ALS. One of the things that we do wherever we go within the Pacific is to incorporate an ICANN sort of like outreach sort of a section within our program, and we're supported by that through SAVE to actually provide us with a bit of funding to actually sort of like carry out that role. And I guess it's sort of like it means though that we're relying on ISOC. Do all that work, and we do need to actually get a little bit of a balance here with regards to the support that ICANN can give. But I also just like to highlight that within the Pacific region, because it is so large, one of the things that we've actually put in for a project is a pilot that we're working on to work in the Papua New Guinea, Vanuatu, the Melanesian region. For the following year, which we're using as a pilot, and we want to actually move into the Melanesian region, which is the far north, which is an area that we never get into. But it is an area that does need to have some work. We're doing this as an ALS. So it's the ALS that's actually doing the work. And I think that this is one of the things too, because we want to encourage ALSs to actually be getting out there and actually doing things for themselves.
Thank you, Maureen. Have I understood you want to do it yourself and you don't need the help of the capacity building working group? Okay, Alberto Soto.
So speaking, there is a capacity building program for leaderships, and I think it's being carried out for the second time. So there is a leadership training program that was developed last week, and this is the second time or third time that it's being carried out. So taking into account all the people that attended that training course, well, they said that this should have been carried out before or at the very beginning of the position. So my question is, or my suggestion perhaps I say, is this, that this type of programs, this is not going to be a face-to-face program because we have no funds, but perhaps we should carry out a similar program so as to train those people that would be the candidates for positions within our region. Thank you.
Much, Alberto. And this kind of training is done by the ICANN Academy, and Sandra is here. So I think it is undertaken for this reason, for the newcomers and also for the senior leaders, because we need both of them to interact first, and second, to make use of the senior to make the training also. Fatima.
Dima Cambronero speaking. In our region, in Lagrallo and in ALAG, we have been talking about capacity building since our very beginning, and many of us have been involved in our initiatives. And as you have already heard me saying, I don't think money is necessary for some of these initiatives. In Lagrallo, we had a program without having money. We invited community, we invited members of the community to speak about certain topics so that they can train us in certain issues, such as technical issues. So that is my comment on one hand. And on the other hand, I would like to mention something that I am concerned about. And this is that I would like to know, how is it that we are receiving, or, I mean, what is the return on investment in this case? I mean, when we train people, how do these people return their support to us? Because we train people, we invest in that people, and then they leave ICANN. They do not keep, they do not stay in ICANN to help us. So perhaps that is our fault, because we cannot retrain or keep them so that they can help us and contribute to the development of our community. So I would like to say this, and let's try to see what we can do to retain, to keep those people so that they can keep on contributing, involving, and escalating into the different spaces within ICANN. Thank you
very much, Fatima. I understood that the LAC region doesn't need the help of the capacity building working group, capacity building. I note that. As for people who are investing for their capacity building and they leave ICANN, we are doing the capacity building for our ALSs. For our ALSs. And we have the obligation to do that. It is our duty to make capacity building for them. Even if they leave after that or if they stay in ICANN, this is another issue. There are other programs, MUN program, that may help them to stay. I didn't see any ALS asking, or very few ALSs that left at large. So I don't think that people are leaving. They are not active, yes. That's why we are doing the capacity building, to give them the tools to participate. We are not. It is not enough, I know, but it is necessary. They don't understand, they will not participate. So let them understand, and then if they participate or not, if there is another problem, we have to solve it. Umberto.
Thank you very much. I'm going to speak in Spanish.
So I have two mics instead of one. Umberto Carrasco speak. I mean, I am listening to all of you, and it is difficult not to agree with all the topics, because there is a phenomenon here. I mean, we have different point of view for a same analysis of a same phenomenon. So many of the comments are okay. I mean, I agree with those comments. But I would like to somehow take Fatima's comment in terms that we have a capacity building program within LAC-RALO, and we have detected that the problem has nothing to do with material content on capacity building. The problem has to do with the fact that people do not want to participate. And the question would be, why do they not, they don't want to participate? I mean, I've been wondering this during my all the time I have been working for LAC-RALO as a leader. And it's my personal opinion and conviction that despite the fact that we are volunteers, there are people who are more volunteer than others. So it means, or this means that there are people who have certain interests in participating in a more active way. So the idea is how we can bring those who are not participating actively. I believe that since we have to offer them, and I'm not talking about money, but we have offered them certain incentive, perhaps we can get to an agreement with a university. I mean, just to have a kind of certificate, perhaps, when they perform a training, they can have a certificate, something that might be useful for them in their everyday life. Or, for example, in the case of LAC-RALO, perhaps it would be possible to get certain training in terms of languages so that they can take and so that they can get a certificate for the future that might be helpful for them in the future and that might contribute to their training, because if we have bilingual people within LAC-RALO, we will have greater participation. So that might be a concrete incentive that might be got by means of an agreement with an educational institution. I don't know. We have been trying to work out this. We are working on this in our leadership. But I think this would be a way forward. Thank you.
Number two. I repeat that the participation of the LSS is not the duty of the capacity building. Our duty is to give them the information and the knowledge they need to participate. If they don't participate after that, there's other thing that is missing. And this other thing is not in the duty of the capacity building working group. What we try to do now is to find the best way, give the best information and the best knowledge to our ALSs so that they can. I would like to tell you that we don't do capacity building for fun. We do capacity building for the subjects that are needed for our ALSs to understand and to contribute in the ICANN activities. For example, this year, the most important thing in ICANN was the transition and the accountability. We focused on those two issues very strongly. And we did first webinars on each function of of IANA. People don't know what are those functions. We did twice webinars for those functions. Second, we focused on the accountability, and we said why we need the accountability mechanisms. Also another time, we made a webinar about the contribution of at-large in the accountability and in the transition. Those are things that are needed for our ALSs to understand what is going on and to be able to participate if they want to participate. This is the aim of the capacity working group. Sure, we are not solving all the problem of the ALSs participation. We know that there are a lot of problems, and we are discussing that in the ALS. There is a new working group about the ALSs, and we are discussing that inside this group. But don't forget that our duty is to educate, to give information, to give knowledge to our ALSs. Ian, first?
No, sorry.
Okay. Alan.
Thank you. What I heard Humberto say, and maybe I misunderstood, is it's not only a problem that they don't participate after being educated, they don't participate in the education. And that's certainly part of the come. So that's not our problem as such, but if we're putting a lot of effort into building courses and they don't come, there's an expression in English, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And that situation we're in right now, and that comes back to the what work we're doing on ALS criteria and expectations. You know, maybe they just don't really fit here. Maybe they only like, having a membership card and it doesn't really get. We need to be talking more to our ALSs, and that is a RALO responsibility, understanding why it is they have no interest, and maybe they have no interest. Or maybe we're doing it wrong. I do think language education is probably a bit beyond our remit, though it is a major stumbling block. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Exactly, you said exactly what we said. Any other question about that? Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. Okay.
Thank you very much, Tijan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. I mentioned things that Alan has said. Obviously, I'm not going on ALS leaving.
En cuanto a el hecho de que van las ALS, bueno, a veces no es que se van las ALS, los que se van, y por una buena región, y es una buena razón, y es que han sido contratados por otra, el espacio de la gobernanza de Internet. De paso, o de momento, en el curso, se ayudará a la gente a que dé los primeros pasos, pero tenemos que aceptar todo esto, porque es parte de lo que hacemos, hacer esta creación de capacidades.
Later on, with another set of people, when there are new set of people that are coming, generational thing, and unfortunately, due to the very fact that we are getting people from out there, we do have a high turnover of people. Thank you.
Alan. Ili.
Thank you. Just one sentence. Begin to realize how important this issue is, because we at ALAC were supposed to represent these guys. And if these guys do not recognize us, then we lose our legitimacy and the very reason of existence. So I think this is a very serious issue. And I think, again, back to the question, yes, that why would they want, why do we want them, right, of course, for our legitimacy, but why they want to participate, that is still my issue, my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I remark that we are having questions that are not under the meat of this capacity. So please, please treat and ask questions about the capacity building working group. Means that if you see other tools of capacity building working group, if you see other methods, other way to it, how we can interest ALSs, yes, please ask. Please about participation and the recognition of the ALSs of the at large. This is not our issue. Thank you very much.
Tijani?
Yes?
I ask you to try to bring it to a close. You've already used up two working groups.
I'm sorry. So this is another reason.
It's not your fault you have a popular topic, but we do have...
Thank you. Jimmy, please.
Okay. I heard the word and will be fast. I really tried to get out, reach out by applying for talks on conferences about what we do here, especially, for example, the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg, which is the largest hacker congress in the world, for around about 8,000 participants. And they denied, didn't accept my talk. I'll try it again this year. And I've tried that with a lot of other ALSs and internet-related groups in Germany and worldwide too. And sometimes it works, but most of the time they are not interested. They don't care what we do here. They don't, because they don't understand, because it's too complex, they don't even care. They're not interested. And that's so ridiculous. I talk about it. Then they say, well, that's great.
Thank you very much. Satish?
Satish Babu, Ipirello. Very quickly, when you listen to these comments, one gets a feeling that there is some kind of meta capacity or readiness on part of the ALS. If you don't have that readiness, then they're not willing to kind of come forth. In the case of Ipirello, we have noticed that our webinars were not so popular initially. But when you keep, it seems to be better pickup. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to say that if we are trying to find other ways, other tools of capacity building and other ways to do it, if we are asking for the help of the I Can Learn to make our webinars always ready, always available for people to retrieve them, it is especially because we notice that the participation is not that high. It is not null. We have a good preparation, but it's not satisfactory for us. So what I ask you is to provide us with your idea about other tools perhaps, how to improve our work. And tomorrow we will have a session on capacity building. Please come, please come, please come. Thank you.
The next working group is outreach and engagement. Do we have Dave online, or is there?
Good morning. This is Dave Anand. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, and it's turning the meeting over to you now. What we'll manage the queue unless you want us, since I don't think you can easily see cards on the table.
Over. Thanks, Alan. Indeed, I'm glad you'll be able to handle the queue. I have some slides available. So while those slides are going up, and I know we're pressed time, let me just give a brief introduction to what the ALAC outreach and engagement. So, it's up on the screen. Great. So, to talk about the ALAC subcommittee on outreach and engagement, develop strategies to reach out to new potential members of the at-large community, which is outreach, and to engage new and existing members of the at-large community to continue to fulfill at-large and ALAC's role in ICANN. So, this subcommittee will work with the at-large community to ensure such strategies are implemented successfully. So, this is going to be slide 5 now. So, halfway through. So, next slide. Slide. All right. Well, one more slide up back. Okay. So this is slide 4, by the way. So, to give an introduction to the outreach subcommittee was sorry. Let me just start over. Just to give some background, this used to be the outreach subcommittee, and a key activity for the outreach subcommittee from 2013 to mid 2015 was to coordinate and manage efforts related to the CROP program, which stands for Community Regional Outreach Pilot Program, which allows for outreach travel to events for outreach purposes for up to 3 days, 2 nights for travelers. And at ICANN 52 meeting in Singapore, the ALAC voted to change the focus of the outreach subcommittee to also to include issues of engagement, hence the name change to the Outreach and Engagement Subcommittee. So the reconstitution of this subcommittee was done after the ICANN 53 meeting, and the first Outreach and Engagement Subcommittee call was held on August 3rd, 2019. So the Outreach and Engagement has held 4 meetings since ICANN 53. One of the key requirements that we have done was to develop outreach strategic plans for each RALO. So each RALO outreach strategic plan needed to explain its FY16 outreach goals and planned expectations so that any CROP travel can be coordinated with the ICANN's global stakeholder engagement. The members from the outreach and engagement has developed those strategic plans for each of the RALOs. And you would see those links for each of those links on the slide. But just to, and next slide. So the RALO strategic plans, some key characteristics. They identify key outreach events in the region. They identify an analysis of gaps in ALS regional representation was done. And many of them have measurable outcomes. Okay, so that's the strategic plans, outreach strategic plans for each RALO. What we've also done is created group calendars at TEAMUP to track and regional outreach events for possible use for CROP to attend such events. And we've created regional calendars for each of the regions. And again, the links are there in the presentation slide. And next slide. And so just to give a look at what the outreach calendar is, it allows a web-based view, and you can see all of the regional events in whatever region you're interested in, and you can also subscribe to those events. And more importantly, we want to be able to coordinate and work with global stakeholder engagement to add their events that they're working on. Next slide. And this comes back to we commented also on the civil society engagement by 16. There's been some, I don't know where you were, Jean-Jacques Sahel, in earlier sessions at Dublin. So one of our key concerns was that, you know, there's a lack of regular sustained coordination between at-large and global stakeholder engagement. We often find by chance many times about a nearby ICT event GSE is participating in that would have benefited with an at-large to assist with outreach. So we've made some recommendations, and I believe they have been taken on board. That they include having the GSE added to our outreach and engagement list, and perhaps we can have a regular conference call between the outreach and engagement and global stakeholders to review outreach events. Right? Okay, next slide. Yeah. So one of the things that we've also done is selected a member from this outreach and engagement subcommittee to serve on the Community Regional Outreach Pilot Program Review Team. And these are the persons that will help coordinate in the filing of crop applications through the crop system. So the crop outreach members from this outreach and engagement subcommittee are, well, you see those five persons are on the slide there, Daniel Naghara from AFRALO, Ali Michelle from APRALO, Julia Morenitz from URALO, Juan Manuel Rojas from LACRALO, and Glenn McKnight from NORALO. We've also developed a flyer for the ALAC events at the ICANN 54 in Dublin, and the intent was for those that to be printed and given to persons like ICANN fellows and the next-gen persons. And we've also done a preliminary and analysis ICANN fellowship program for potential membership. Next slide. So some of the ongoing work that's being done by the outreach engagements, we've under review of the beginner's guides to at-large structures. We've also begun a discussion on ideas for engagement strategies. I note a lot of the questions geared towards the capacity building probably ties in with engagement issues. How do we get existing ALSs to participate more in ICANN at-large? So we've begun discussing that. We're also working with the at-large new meeting strategy working part on possible outreach strategies that will be taking place with the new ICANN meeting B that's going to be happening in Panama in 2016. Many of the members from the outreach and engagement are in the meeting strategy working part. Iran, myself, Vanda, and Maureen as well. We're also going to be looking to collaborate a little more closely with the at-large capacity building working group. And again, try to figure out how do we make the capacity building sessions more coordinated and complementary to any outreach and engagement strategies we develop. And next slide. So for more information, you can follow the links on the slide. We have we've documented some of the work that we've done. There's the links there also takes you to some of the outreach and engagement documents that were produced and or we are tracking. So a lot of outreach materials such as introduction to ICANN, so forth, links to like the global stakeholders engagement speaker handouts available in a multiple of many languages, for example, to explain what is ICANN, what is ALAC, beginner's guides and so forth. And I'll stop and take any questions. Thank you.
We have Olivier.
Very much, Alan. Olivier Capanron speaking. And Dave, first, I'd like to put it on the record that it's a real pity that you're not with us here in Dublin. The amount of work that you've done on this with your working group is absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure whether you were on the call just when we were discussing capacity building work that was taking place. There was an intervention from Kylie Khan, one of our new ALS representatives, and one of our new ALAC representatives. I'm getting my words wrong. But also one also from Jimmy Schultz. And both actually touched on the outreach and engagement more than capacity building because, and I'm not sure if you were there, but Kylie Khan basically told us that there appeared to be some disconnect, some difficulty with being able to reach those users and gaining their interest. And Jimmy Schultz told us that he had tried to go and do some talks out there and there didn't appear to have been some interest in people in listening to things about ICANN. How can we get over this?
Well, we only ask you interesting questions.
Yes, indeed. It's not a simple answer, and outreach and engagement session later this evening. We'll be having a more deep dive into the engagement strategies and ideas. Things that I've been thinking of is that, you know, we have to try to find, I would say ALSs, that we have to find organizations and ALSs to see if they care about, I would say, issues at the local DNS level. This is probably one approach. And then, because I think one of the things is that if they don't care, if ALSs don't care about issues at the local level, they're not going to really care about the issues at global level. So that's probably one key thing. So, and once we relate to sharing information that's related to them at the local level, and what are examples of DNS issues at your local level? CCTLD policies and how their CCTLD operate. And you know, security of their domains under that, privacy issues like who is and so forth. And then once you see the correlation that, hey, this affects me, then, you know, the issues regarding the bigger global issues like IANA transition and so forth, those key issues then become, I think, more important, and because now they can understand. They now understand, okay, because a lot of people locally are using generic top-level domains, policies that are set by those registries affects those registrants, so forth. So that's just one idea. But we're having a more deep dive later on this evening. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Harley?
Thank you, Alan. Yeah, just again, back to the question that Olivia, you just mentioned. Well, one possibility, because I'm primarily from a telecom background, okay, one possibility is that our situation is similar to the telecom, because over the last 20, 30 years, telecom not in shortage, it's actually in surplus. So fewer and fewer people are interested in telecom. So is it possible that our number and name business is so well done that people don't feel it's an issue anymore? Yeah. If that is the problem, we at ICANN need to look into this issue and see where else can we best serve the netizens in the world. And I believe there are issues, but probably we need to ask our netizens at a very grassroots level, what concerns you now and how can we help?
Thank you very much. I think that's an interesting intervention because it comes right back to engagement with our ALS's individual users. And, you know, maybe there is not as much connection. I've used a line that many of you have heard before that will rarely go around and say the sewer system is working well today. When it doesn't work, there is significant interest, and the same is with water and electricity. Maybe some of what we're doing is just so part of the normal life that nobody cares a lot anymore. But in that case, since we keep busy, there must still be something we need done. I see two more hands, and I'm going to close the queue. And we have Holly and Sirenish.
Holly Rice for the transcript. Really, in replies, a lot of what I'm involved with, but other people are involved in, you explain, for example, a lot of the issues surrounding the who is requirement are about privacy. And in the internet world, people don't even think about privacy. You have a lot of people within here furiously arguing about what the rules should be. We even had, you know, representatives from the European delegation downstairs who suddenly decided, oh, this is an issue for us. We're not terrific thinking about it for years. Things like the inter-registrar transfer, you know, it's the IRTP, that's the language we use. Who would know about it? Except if you're a registrant and your name's taken away, you can't transfer, there are a whole lot of problems that could happen. You wouldn't be aware of until you can't do it or until you've lost your domain name. So to say that it doesn't impact, wrong, but it's, again, it's like the sewer. It works, well, it sort of works well, but a lot of, well, some of us are actually involved in the working groups that say, you have to think about the user. You have to actually put the user perspective there and argue for it. So it's not an easy question because a lot of the things that have an important user impact, you really have to actually get involved in the working groups. You have to get involved in some serious policy discussion. Then you begin to realize that yes, the sewer works, but guess what? It wasn't an easy job.
Molly Sirenish.
Thank you, Chair. Sirenish for the record. I would like to come back what Dev told about the calendar, outreach calendar. And first, Dev, thank you very much for such a great job. And I would like to highlight the importance of using this calendar. For AP Rallo, it helped. Just send a link to our LSS saying, is there anyone going on there? And we found out there are thousands of events. Literally about 12 LSS came back to us saying, that's what we are doing. This is within the framework of internet governance, ICANN. So, and we said, send us those information. Don't send us those links. And we put this in the calendar. It may take some time, but it's really worth it to do that. And I would encourage that all of us use this tool. And that's why I also raised yesterday during our meeting with JSC team that it's important to collaborate on this topic. We found out, for example, for IGF in Islam, first summer school, school on internet governance in Islamabad is quite actively involved. GCE team there, but we learned this from our ALS. So the collaboration here is very important. And if there will be a unique calendar for all of us, we would be aware about the upcoming events and see where we can participate and support. And this is about engagement, first of all, which should be a priority for all of us. Thank you.
Dernish. And thank you, Dave. And we will now go on to... oops, yes, sorry.
By the way...
Go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Thanks. No problem. I know there's a delay here. So just to answer some questions, and I just want to go back to one slide that that I want to raise to show. These are the members from the... when I was nominated and accepted the role of chair, I wanted to get regional co-chairs to help coordinate the activities of the subcommittee. So we have Glenn McKnight as co-chair from North America, from Daniel Naghaka from Africa region, and from Maureen Hillard, the co-chair from Asia, Australasia, and Pacific Islands. And we have, for Europe, we have Olivia Crepin-Leblanc to be confirmed, so for the European region. So I just want to emphasize that, well, that, you know, this is open to all persons who care about these outreach and engagement issues. And I sense from the questions in the room that, you know, many people do care about these issues. So please join the group. I'll stop there.
Thank you again, Dave. I appreciate you being here at not the best time. And I appreciate you putting all this effort into it, even though you're not here physically with us. So thank you. The next session is the Academy Working Group. And Sandra will take that. Can we, before that, have an update? Are our guests expected on time or not? You're checking. In theory, we have people coming in 10 minutes. The Finance and Budget Committee will not take anywhere near its allotted time. Sandra, you have almost 10 minutes or more if our guests are late.
Thank you, Alan. It's Sandra speaking. I assume many of you are aware of that the third leadership program just took place before this meeting because we were voting or we were selecting the people which are going from our regions to that program. It was the third in a row, and in German there is a saying, if it's the third in a row, it becomes a tradition. I think there's no way of getting rid of this anymore. I must say... We are close to being perfect with that program. I mean, we had some adjustments in the past. We took the feedback from our participants very, very seriously. And the feedback we received right now was exceptional, positive, and there are really only little things where we can tweak and where we can say, okay, just do a little bit more, and then it's nearly perfect. But as you know, there's always space for improvement. If Ariel could just start the slideshow, then you can see on one picture and then go to slideshow. These are some pictures from the leadership program. There is no presentation as such, so people get an idea about how much fun it was. one of the greatest improvements or one of the greatest movements this year was that there was almost also no borderline between community and staff. We had one staff member participating. It's from Nora's apartment. It was Lauren. I'm sorry, I always mix up the names. And this was really enlightening, the way that there was actually no barrier between staff and community anymore. Heidi, Gisela were participating, besides that they did all the preparation in advance. And you really got the feeling, which was the idea of this program, that ICANN is discussing, or participants are discussing as a community without any borders. From our community, we had Sean, Uriye, Umberto, Maureen, and Judith participating. Unfortunately, there's none of them in the room at the moment, because otherwise I would have asked one of them to give a short summary. But okay, nobody's there. You can ask them individually. We also had the incoming board member, Lucevis, participating, which was good. Unfortunately, she could only stay for 1.5 days and for the socials in the evening, because there is a parallel onboarding process going on. And this brings us to an issue. We will change the dates for that program. It will not be the C meeting in the future. I mean, because the C meeting is going to be very long anyway. It takes you away 2 weeks from home. It also clashes way too much with the onboarding processes of the communities. It does not really fit with the NOMCOM selections, which came out quite late this year, so it's impossible for people to get the visa in time to arrange their travel before the meeting starts. So we will discuss this to shift that leadership training program either to the A meeting or even to the very short B meeting. So this brings us in the position that we might have 1.5 years until the next training can take place, because it has to go into the financial year, and this is not the case for the next A or nor for the next B meeting. But we believe it will have a great improvement in terms of that. For instance, an incoming board member is already a little bit familiar with the community and has then maybe more questions to ask, and it is not so conflicting with their schedule. I see Umberto just arrived. I just told everyone that you were participating in that program. Sorry to put you on the spot right away, but maybe you can give some of your experiences. Very short, we only have 10 minutes, but I think it's worth giving you the floor at that stage.
Thank you very much. I'm going to speak in Spanish.
Just to be clear. Our guests are here, and they are due to start in 4 minutes, and I would like at least 1.5 minutes for finance and budget. So if you could try to wrap up in 5 to 7 minutes.
It's going to be very short. Don't worry about that. Umberto Carrasco para los registros.
This is Umberto Carrasco. It was a highly rewarding experience, mainly because it allowed me to have contact with people with more experience, but also with members from other organizations from ICANN. That allows to expand the vision. Although it is a very intensive program requiring many hours of hard work, it is amazing how much knowledge you eventually gather, and you can get an idea. In addition to this, networking with people from various areas. In my personal experience, we continued the relationship with them. So from that, it has been a successful program. I hope it will be replicated, and let me congratulate its organizers, the staff, and the rest of the parties.
Thank you very much, Umberto. Well, the leadership program is just one activity of the Academy Working Group, and to be honest, regarding the other scope of the Academy Working Group, nothing has happened since the Buenos Aires meeting. Due to the summer break, due to the CCWG and CWG, everyone was busy with that. And then organizing this leadership program, it was just no capacity or no resource anymore to do something else. For the Marrakesh meeting, and now that we have at least 1.5 years or 15 months until the next leadership program, We will refocus on the objectives and aims and activities of the Academy Working Group. This goes along with the development of the website. We will work in close cooperation with Nora's department and also our large staff. We will renew the call to the community for participation. Some community or stakeholder groups already identified members for this working group, and we will have to make it a cross-community working group. And as I just learned, Cheryl had a wonderful idea for her cross-community effort, which is a cross-community committee where you need no charter and can get around all these formalities. So this might be also a model for the ICANN Academy working group to form it a cross-committee and cross-committee, whatever it will be. We will restart or start the process until Marrakesh and have an Academy working group meeting in Marrakesh, I expect so. Thank you very much.
There is a blank blank page. I guess it's Olivier.
Thank you very much. Olivier Crépin-Renonce, formerly known as Blank. You mentioned a movement, Sandra, of the timing of the leadership training program from the AGM to a later meeting or some other point. Earlier, we had someone who actually said that they would have wished that they had gone through the leadership training program before starting their function. But as we know, some relos actually seat their leadership before the AGM. If you're going to delay the leadership training program till the B meeting or the A or B meeting, isn't that counterproductive?
Sandra speaking. Olivier, this is a good question, and you know that I was advocating always for the C meeting, which was formerly not known as a C meeting, but everybody in the room is aware of what we are about the AGM practically. But turned out for the third time that it was so difficult to arrange schedules and that you have conflicting agendas, late NOMCOM nominations, and then you're missing the board members. And that's really, this is a greater loss than participating for like 3 or 4 months as a newcomer and getting the onboarding process maybe later when you are also in the position, ask more qualified questions. I mean, there are not unqualified questions, but you have already experienced some things which are not very clear to you as a newcomer, and you will then be able to ask much more focused questions. And as you might remember, that is an effort from the community for the community. We have incoming leaders, but also well-experienced leaders, such as Udeyu, or from the SSEC, it was... Rasmandi is also very well known in this community. And so there is a mentorship going on, and this might be much more productive if we avoid conflicting schedules. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. I'm last in the queue, and my statement doesn't require an answer. I guess I explicitly don't want an answer. Given that we have a backlog of people who would love to have participated in this, it's unfortunate that the change in timing does not mean that we hold one in Marrakesh or in Panama, that waiting a year and a half instead of just a half a year might be far more appropriate. At the same time, this is of such use to the community that I hope ICANN will start putting other resources into it other than just that large staff into it, because I think indeed, although they've been doing a great job, we have to institutionalize this more. I don't require an answer. If you want a short one, fine. Then we'll spend 2 minutes on the Finance and Budget Subcommittee and then go on to Finance and Budget People.
Sandra speaking, just a very short reply. If there are funds within the current budget, financial year budget available, we will be happy to do so. We can even do a short version at a B meeting or something like this, but it all depends on funds.
I would think this is something, I don't have a clue what this costs. I would say it's worthy of a special budget, exceptional budget within year request. Now that we've said that in the presence of certain people, the last item on the working group part of this meeting is the Finance and Budget Subcommittee. All I'll say is we have not been as active as we should have been. Given that we are in a new ICANN year, we will be very shortly after meeting, reaffirming or reselecting members for the committee. They may change or may not, and we will start holding meetings on a regular basis. We have fiscal year budget requests that are due in not imminently, but we need to start working on them. And more important, the Finance and Budget Subcommittee needs to put together some ground rules for the rest of the community to work for. So you will see action there. Nothing else to report at this point. And may I ask our guests to come to the table? Thank you very much. We will reconvene the next part of this meeting in a moment. I have Carol Cornell to my right, to your left, and that is not Xavier, though. I will let
you. Nash.
Thank you. And is Xavier joining us? Or?
No, he's hiding.
And I'm Darren Presley.
Right beside Cheryl. And I will turn the meeting over to you.
Thank you very much. Today we're going to give you a full operations update. If you want to go to the next slide, please leave it there, please. This is the agenda. I'm going to introduce Becky, the Vice President of Finance.
Thank you. This is Becky Nash, and today we're going to the FY17 operating KPI beta dashboard, off the financials update, and then pass it through the various ways that we provide and publish information, early stakeholder calls, and a fiscal year 15 Q4 call held on August 20th, our FY16 Q1 call on October 6th. We also publish quarterly our financial package on our website. And in addition to our financial package, we publish our annual audited financial statements every year by October 30th. And also have our Form 990, which is the tax return form, along with other types of public reporting that support our transparency and accountability. We have our FY17 operating plan and budget process, hold stakeholder calls on, and that we've done working groups on. And these are all of the different initiatives that we have for publicizing our financial. Now we're going to go over some financial data, our FY15 and Q1 FY16.
Just one comment to add to what Becky just said, if we can go back on this slide before. The information that you have there is about financial information that we share that is not required by regulation. Form 990 is a tax-required information, and it's required to publish it. The audited financials is a requirement by law to perform, and it's a requirement also for us by law to publish them. The information that you have here, the quarterly stakeholder call, we don't have obligations to produce quarterly information. The quarterly financial package is also not something that we have to do, but that we believe is value in transparency and accountability at the end of the day, to produce regular financial information so that everyone at any point of time can know what the financial situation of ICANN is. So the reason why you have here the items that are here is about our transparency and accountability, and Becky added to it also the additional information that we produce as per regulatory risks. Thank you. So I will go over quickly the financial information for FY15 and FY16. You may remember that our financial year, our fiscal year, goes from July to June every year. So we closed the fiscal year 15 year end of June, so 3 months ago. 3.5 months ago, we are finalizing the audit. Our auditors are finalizing the audit of that year just now, this week, actually. So the work is getting done. And we're getting any issues out of that audit. It's going to be a successful one again. Here you have a very short overview of our operations financial information for that period that closed. So this is 12 months of information. This is FY15 from July 2014 to June 2018. We had a budget balanced of revenues and expenses of 104 million, and right here. And we early on in the year, we expected that our revenue would actually be lower simply because of the less the lower number of registries delegated into the route that we started the year with, which has driven most of the variance of that revenue here. So we had 2 million less of revenues. And since we knew that early on, we had also adjusted our rate of spending to ensure that we never exceed our revenue. So as you can tell, we plan for a balanced expense and revenue. And we ended up with a slight excess of 2 million as a result of monitoring our expenses. The initiatives are expenses. In this case, it was exclusively the USG transition project. These expenses are funded from the reserve fund, as you may know. As you also have heard, I'm sure, we spent more money than we originally were planning to on this topic by approximately 2 million, largely driven by the independent legal advice that the troops have been using. So a bit less of revenue, a bit less of expenses here, a bit more of expenses here. The bottom line is that we ended up in the same position than what we had budgeted for. So there's net, there's no variance between actuals and budget. We were about on budget where we were expecting. Any questions? Yes.
According to revenue, so I just wonder, say, is our revenue consent from the names, numbers that issue, or are there other revenue streams like donations or?
So as Carol said, each time we take out a slide from a deck, that's where we have a question. So we'll have to revise our strategy. We just went through the exercise of eliminating a lot of slides because we thought there were too many of them. And that's one of them. So, but the answer to your question is very simple. 96% of our revenues is resulting from the contract with the contracted parties, registries, and RAS, who, at the end of the day, are the channel for us to collect revenue from the registrants, right? Because the transaction fees that we collect, the 25 cents per registrations, comes from the registrant through the registries and the registrars, right? So registries and registrars fees that we bill, whether they are fixed or transaction-based fees, represent 96%. The rest, the 4% left, is the contributions, voluntary contributions from the country code operator, the CCTLDs. Most of them being part of the CCNSO, but not necessarily all of them being part of the CCNSO. And we have also approximately year on year about 1 million of sponsorship revenue from ICANN meetings. So the booth that they have downstairs are generating about 200,000 to 300,000 of sponsorship money per ICANN meeting. And it helps us.
I just thought of one thing that I understand that ICANN's operation is largely based on volunteering. However, on the other hand, many members of the many volunteers also are their main source of income is like consulting and other kinds of similar activities. So I just wonder whether ICANN can count that volunteering as surrendered income, which will, for example, have a tax benefits for people like Alan. And as a matter of fact, just by doing that accounting, actually, that we can better measure our real size of operations and also bring the benefits to our volunteers. Just a thought. Thank you.
I'm going to take the chair's position and answer.
Sorry.
I said I'm going to take the chair's position and answer that question. You can give me a further answer.
Thank you. There is a technical answer to this subject.
No. As a volunteer, I would be delighted to have a tax deduction that I could apply, which you probably can't give me since I live in Canada. Ignoring that, And you can't spend the tax, you can't spend my donation in real expenses, but it would be a really interesting thing to calculate. Back to you, Xavier, and I see Garth is in the queue.
So the, I'm not sure what tax deduction you're talking about, but know that
I have donated $500,000 of my time to you this year.
No, but this is not a tax deduction, or is it?
I want a receipt.
Oh, I can give you any receipt you want, but this is not a tax deduction.
My hourly rate to McKinsey is $4,000 an hour, $4,000 US per hour.
No, no, I understand, but what tax deduction is there as a result is what I'm trying to understand. Since ICANN is not for profit, there's no tax deduction, of course.
We're not really going to get it. We understand that.
Right. But the impact of the impact of the, we can talk about the tax aspect later, but the impact of the time of the volunteers, or the stakeholders being a lot of volunteers, is something that we, Becky and I have had that conversation a few weeks ago, is something that we're looking into to determine. There are accounting rules about that, right? It's donated resources exists, right? The question is, we need to investigate further what is the accounting requirements about it, and what is the scope of that accounting requirements. So those donated resources have a relatively specific accounting definition associated to it. So we need to look at the accounting aspect, accounting requirement. And I think that we can use that accounting requirement to see how it fits best the ICANN specific circumstances of policy development and other activities as well. And I think that it will be an extensive but certainly useful conversation to determine how do we capture that and how do we communicate it. Right? And even if we would end up by seeing that from an accounting standpoint, it's not qualifying, it's not necessarily checking the accounting boxes, it doesn't mean that we cannot try for ourselves to track that. What I think, there's a lot of value in doing it. There's also a lot of resources to simply trying to do it. My point being, it's going to take a lot of time and discussions to even agree on whose time are we counting. How much time are we counting? Are we counting the time of just the elected people? You see what I'm saying? It's a Pandora's box, but it's a useful box to look at, for sure. So we have, to be very honest, it's not been on the top of our priority list to look at, but it's on the list. So thank you for confirming that. I don't want to be emotional about it, but the first person that I had this conversation with is Alain Béranger, who's not with us anymore.
It's a particularly difficult situation in our case. So many of the volunteers are in fact paid by do it, and their companies get a benefit from the work. So it is a challenge. We have Garth and an online question.
Yes.
I have a general question about documentation, so it could wait till the end of it.
I'm not aware. Is there more presentation?
We have more slides, yes.
Then let's go on.
Okay.
Ariel, is the question specifically related to this?
This is Ariel for the record. It's not a question, just a reminder. Please state your advice. Will I have men, women in the... Also, please speak a little bit closer to the microphone.
Because thank you, Ariel. Back to you, Xavier.
Thank you. So this is Xavier Calvez. Next slide. This is the same information, but just for the past quarter. So now we're in a new fiscal year, FY16. It started July 1st, 3 months ago. So over the past 3 months, we've had we had a budget of 26 million of revenues. We have actual revenues of approximately 26 million. And when I say actual, it's an estimate because we produced it for the quarterly stakeholder call that happened very early October, and we had not finished closing our books by then, so we put an estimate. But it's very close. So, and we had less expenses than we had budgeted, mainly due to timing. And we had about the same amount of initiative expenses we had planned for, even though there are some disparities within the expense, the initiatives, because the USG transition is one on which we have a bit more expenses, again, than we had next. Since we're talking about that, this is the USG stewardship transition costs, project costs. For FY15, so when we closed the year at the end of June, we, if you remember, we had a budget of 10, and we ended up by spending 9. The largest buckets are the independent legal advice for approximately 3.1 million between March and June, which is an average of 600 or 700 K per month. Other professional services that includes internal legal advice, that includes the meetings, consultants, that includes language services, translations, thank you, the translators, communications, many different services that supported the project, This is the evaluation of the allocation of personnel time to the project. It's the staff that supports the groups. It's the Teresa Switard, Grace Abu-Hamad, all the people that you know who support. Next, same information for FY16. Next slide, please. This is just for 3 months, so we're at 2.8 million for 3 months. It was 1.8. The independent legal advice is a million and a half for 3 months. So we're still in the same range of about half a million per month. We need to finish the work quickly. And the rest is about similar. Next. This is a bit of a complicated slide, but I didn't want to ignore the new GTLD program and its financial impact on the organization. So you may remember that in 2012, when we closed the application window, we had approximately 2,000 applications for new GTLDs. So we collected approximately $362 million of application fees to process the applications, to evaluate them. This is the total view of the cost of the program. So we are expecting approximately 56 million of refunds. Those are the applications that are being withdrawn from the program, and therefore we refund either the totality or a fraction of the fees, depending upon how far the applications have gone into the process. There's then all the costs for processing the applications, all the evaluation panels and so on, as well as the infrastructure of the program. On the right here, you have the breakdown by year. So this is FY12 to FY14. This is the just recently closed year, FY15, and we have another 2 years, 16 and 17, so far is what we're planning to have the program covering and finishing towards the end of FY17. Of course, this also tells you that the evaluation costs are expected to lead us, including refunds, to approximately 274 million of total costs, versus 362 of total fees. The difference in the remainder is for all the unpredictable costs that could occur relative to the program, including risks, including lawsuits. And that's what the fee was including to cover as well. Questions? Next. Yes. Go ahead.
Sorry, Rafa, Tony, for the record.
Can we come back on the previous slide?
The cost of 218 million, you said that's running costs?
Sorry?
The 218?
Is it what cost? I didn't hear.
You said the running costs?
It's all the costs to process the evaluation of the applications. So consultant costs, staff costs, infrastructure costs.
During which period?
This is the whole program over how long it will take. 5 years, approximately. And then you have the breakdown by period. So this is FY12 to FY14. There's about 3 years' worth of costs here. This is during FY15. In total, that was approximately 50 million, and so on. You're welcome. Next. So this is a picture of our... that was on the previous slide as well. Yeah, sorry, go back. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Xavier. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. When you speak about the program forecast and you then show us how much way year by year, how long is the full program? Because 10 years, then you can take everything out.
You're right. So what is the end of the new GTLD program is a very interesting question. I've been asking that question for a long time, as long as the program has lasted. So what we what is visible to us, put it differently, what can be estimated is the evaluation or the application processing work. Honestly, very precise, but, you know, we have contracted with nearly 900 applicants. There's more than 600 into the route. We're getting down to the last applications and processing. So it's becoming a little bit more visible that at some point we're going to finish, of course. The last cases are also a little bit the more complicated ones sometimes. So processing those is not an exact science, or at least knowing how long it's going to take us is not an exact science. But at this stage, our best guess is that we think we're going to finish sometime during calendar 17. We're assuming towards the end of June right now for modeling purposes, but it's, you know, sometime during 17. Having said that, we could still have some cases open by then, and we could have, honestly, ongoing risk mitigation, including lawsuits, if they would appear, for a long time. So I always take the example that the TLD that got delegated in 2004, we closed the litigation associated to it in 2011. So that was 7 years. So when is the program going to effectively be completely done? If you have the answer, you tell me. I've been asking that question for a long time. And nobody knows, of course. We can't know. I'm being facetious about it. We cannot know. So, yes, it's going to last probably longer than that. What we are showing here is the picture of what we're expecting the application processing work to be.
Follow-up, it's Olivier speaking. Is any of this capital expenditure as well, or is it all running?
Very little capital expenditure. So our funds, this is a picture of how much money we have in our bank accounts and investment accounts as of the end of June or the end of September. June or September. We're breaking it into two buckets on this picture simply to show those funds that are driven by the new GTLD program. So we have left approximately 160 million of funds on the program to cover for the expenses that are coming up. These are the auction proceeds that have been collected up to the end of June and the end of September. Same thing. We didn't have any auctions during Q1. And it's sitting basically in an investment account waiting for the process with the community to develop how those funds will be used. So that's the new GTLD program in total, 216 million. And that's the operating funds, or the operation-related funds of ICANN, those more permanent funds, where the operating fund here is basically the cash on hands to pay for daily expenses, or salaries, invoices, and so on. And this is, so this fund is basically a bank account. It is, we receive the fees that we invoice to the registries and the registrars on an ongoing basis, and this is where we pay invoices from. The reserve fund is our more long-term permanent fund. Is for rainy days, for risks, for it's not to be touched normally unless either emergencies or large unplanned expenses, for example, like the USG transition, which is why we are using the reserve fund for that. Any questions on that?
Xavier, how much more in your presentation? We have 15 minutes left in the session, and I'm sure we have.
We can make it 10 minutes, and we're having questions as we go, but do you think we'll have different questions on different after? If we are, we can shorten our presentation.
I would think try to do the presentation.
Taryn.
Okay, thanks, Xavier. Taryn Pressard. This is a reminder of ICANN's planning cycle. We start out with R, includes ICANN's vision, mission, strategic objectives, goals, key success factors, etc., for fiscal years FY 16 through 20. The plan then informs the five-year operating plan for includes a five-year planning calendar, phases, goals, dependencies, goals, and a five-year financial model. The five-year operating plan informs our annual operating budget, which we do on an annual basis with community input, and five-year operating plan also involve. The annual operating plan and budget for public comment, we get a lot of, and that actually informs the final draft that is adopted by the board. Go to, as part of our financial accountability and transparency, we report on a regular basis our achievement and progress toward our goals. So that's done. Becky mentioned some of the ways in which we do all our quarterly financial statements. All of that is validated against the strategic plan that informs, again, goes back through the cycle of updating. Sorry, this is so small and difficult to read. But this is an overview of our FY17 operating plan and budget process. As you can see, there are several steps leading up to the adoption of the FY17 operating plan and budget in June. We go through a planning phase, which has been happening August, September, and October. Development phase being November through February. Draft document in March, finalizing the document, and then adoption in June. The most critical items on this calendar are May and April.
Can we see the bottom of the slide? Because that's what Taryn is commenting now.
Go back up one.
No, yeah. This is not the whole slide.
I think it has to be reduced a bit.
Yeah, here we go.
The most critical part of the calendar is the publishing of the draft document, which is on March 5th. After the document is published, we go through a public comment period.
Is the green bar here. Sorry to interrupt, right. But I want to make sure people understand.
Right, March 30th, and we've given our community more time to do, read the document, digest it. And during that period, ICANN also conducts calls with those who have submitted comments on the understanding of the comments so that we can provide sufficient answers. Just as a note, last year we included the board in that process, doing the comments that were submitted. And in May... this is something that's time in FY15 we were able to do this. We allowed us sufficient time to take the comments into consideration and allow them to allow us to incorporate changes to the operating. Any questions on this slide? Next, please. Thank you. This is a sub-process of the overall FY plan and budget process. This is the SO and AC process, which I know you are all very interested in. This process has not changed much since FY15. We will communicate the process to all SO and AC groups in November. The submission period for requests is 14th through February 15th. The staff will conduct preliminary requests February 16th through March 4th in time for Marrakesh. And we plan to have consultos and ACs that submitted requests at ICANN. Right?
Yeah.
54. And March 11th through 31st will be the time that staff reviews, finalizes the recommendations, and makes recommendations to the board on which request should be approved. And that occurred in April of 2016. We wanted to give you some lessons learned from the FY16 process, but we also wanted to take the opportunity to get some feedback from you all on what you thought went well and what we should continue, and then also to what we should improve. So some of the things that we know that we should continue based on feedback gotten from different community members is that the annual operating plan and budget is derived from a five-year operating plan. That is came out of ATRT2, and we will definitely continue to do that. We have started the process earlier, which has allowed a lot more staff interaction. And, again, it allows for more time to work on the public comment period and hear things about the draft operating plan and budget. The process last year included interactive engagements, meaning face-to-face working sessions. We had a group this past Sunday, which went very well. We had a lot of interaction, a lot of good feedback from the community. So we will definitely do that in the future. We had draft responses. As I mentioned, We had time to review the public comments that were submitted, which with each of the groups had the best responses. We also, as I mentioned, included the board in the public comment process, improving accountability of the board. What we know we need to improve is that although we do have significant unity, it's limited to SO and AC members, and we would like to expand that participation to a wider audience. Improve is the communication on the USG transition monitoring and costs, as well as integrating more and better KPIs into the planning process. Any questions on this slide or recommend? Or
we're down to 5 minutes left, so let's go through the rest as quickly.
Hi, this is Carol Cornell for the 5-year operating plan. Was progress made on FY16 and so from FY17 through phasing of each one of the changes. So it's to incorporate the progress made in FY16. This is just to remind everybody it is based on the strategic plans, 16 goals. Reiterate what I've said, the changes that advise the deliverables and phasing for. Just would like to kind of give you a quick update. As you know, the beta KPI continuing to evaluate the effectiveness, modify the. This is just what the KPI dashboard looks like. If you were to go to the link down at the bottom, you would actually see, and it shows scoring of each one of them, about how the scoring of each, and if you drill down, progress of those KPIs. This is just to mention that organizational excellence is a ICANN, and this is the work we're doing in FYC. We did, many of you know, do an internal in FY17, and we're expanding that, build upon that, for continuous improvement for our process and procedures throughout the organization. That is now available, and you can see some of that progress on our.
And this is using the EFQM methodology.
Yes, and we are using.
We have two speakers at the moment. We have Garth, and I am in the queue. Olivier, who is running the next session, says he'll give us a few minutes so we can run over. Garth.
Thank you. I'm comparing, this is Garth Bruin, Neurello Chair. I'm comparing the current FY budget to the previous budget document from previous year. In the previous year, each line item had associated with it the department and manager associated with each line item. This information has been deleted, removed from the new version. Why is this information not there, and where would we get it? Thank you.
When you say the manager and the department, we'll go back to what you've looked at, because I doubt that we had done that in that fashion at the same level of detail, but we can. Right now, as we are anchoring the budget information, the 300-plus projects, which we've never done before, right? So when we had the project, the names, it was not at the level of projects. What we do now is we use the structure of the management system, which is the 5 objectives, the 16 goals, the 60 portfolios, and the 300 projects, to break down the information. And on our website, you have access to our work front system, which is where the management system is, and you have the 5 objectives have an owner. The goals have an owner as well, or a shepherd. I think we've used that term. Carol, you should go over that to answer that question.
Hi. We're using... Oh, okay. Sorry. Thank you. We are using the same management structure from year over year. So the manager structure starts goal, portfolio, and projects. There is a shepherd for each one of those, which provides a quick update if you were to go and inquire about that from in the company, but also we are using that same information when we...
Okay, so we can... Sorry. Just to finish on what we produce, okay. Because I think it will help you also determine how much we answered your question. We can give the link of the management system so that you can see that breakdown. You can see, you can go in each goal or objective that you would like, and you will see the name of the shepherd there. The one thing I want to add is that the strategic plan is not an organization chart. My point being that an objective or a goal or portfolio or even projects are activities that are supported by different parts of the ICANN staff. So therefore, at that level, it's difficult to associate always a name to it. And by the way, it could change. Right, in the sense that when you have a staff member who is the owner of a project, for example, in March 2015, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be the same staff in August 2015. So that changes along the way as well, which is why it would be false accuracy and information to give names at the very granular level that can actually change after some time as well. Let me stop there and let you continue on the...
Thank you, Garth Bruin. Does the shepherd hold the pen for the check? Do they call the sum at the top level?
No.
Who does then?
So the shepherd is overseeing the achievement of an objective. Then there are effective admins who are in charge of delivering the services that they're in charge to deliver. So, for example, compliance is in charge of compliance. And Maggie Serrad is the responsible for compliance. An objective, I'll try to make the point that I was making earlier, an objective which is maybe objective number or goal number 2.1 is supported by several departments, not just compliance, for example. So, but each department owner owns the budget for their department, which is the resources that are estimated to be necessary to deliver the plan and to deliver on the objectives. You have a question behind which I'm not sure I understand well. When you say who has the checkbook, I have the checkbook. I don't decide anything. We go by the plan. I don't decide how much we're going to spend in contractual compliance. Maggie Serrad does, because she has a plan, she has objectives, she has a plan, which is the subject of public comment. And then she says, but to deliver on that plan, I need this much resources.
So is that made clear anywhere? Is it made clear anywhere how much money people are spending within the organization, how effective it is?
So how much we're spending is exactly what we've been reporting on, and you have 300 projects broken down by types of costs on the websites, the budget process. We can give you the link so that you can see the breakdown of what money is spent where. And then how effective it is why we are producing the dashboard that shows the key performance indicators objective by objective, so that we can demonstrate how effective the work of the organization as a whole is. By the way, it's not just the ICANN staff, right? It's us as a community, how effective we are. Right?
But the money is not tied to a department. It's not clear from this how much each department is spending on different projects. Whether or not they work across the organization in multiple projects, can't see how much money a department's spending on a project.
So we can see how much money is spent on a project. You cannot see for each project the contribution from finance versus compliance versus GSE.
That's extremely vague and doesn't seem to be transparent.
We can look at how much more information we want to produce, but imagine for a second there are 60 departments in ICANN. The 300 projects that we're putting on the website, broken down by personnel versus travel versus professional services versus admin, if we then break that down by department, I mean, I don't know how we're going to be able to, one, manage that amount of information, granular information, two, that how useful it is from a transparency and standpoint, because I can overload you with information. That doesn't mean that I'm being transparent, by the way.
Well, if I'm asking for it and I can understand it, that's transparent to me.
Right.
But are you telling me that your staff members do not use cost center numbers to account for their time?
Correct. We don't track time by project, or we have the time by department, of course. Because, for example, I'm the head of the finance department. I know how many people I have. So I know how much time is spent by the people that I have in my department. So by department, we know.
So that information is there. That information is there, how much being spent. It does exist.
Absolutely. So we have in the budget, can you pull up the page, which page it is in the budget document?
We are going to have to go on to other speakers.
Yeah.
So
but
perhaps
well,
needs to be taken
let's
offline.
Sit down together after this session, if you don't mind, so that we show you what already exists and see how far or not it goes towards the need that you're pointing out. At least you know what exists, because we have a breakdown of all the resources by function. It's not department, because we have 60 departments, but we're providing it by functions. And by the way, I want to make a point very clear. If it's not very transparent, ICANN is the most transparent organization in terms of financial. I've been digging for the past 3 years how much information, financial information, any public organization provides. You want to know what the Red Cross provides? In their annual report, zero. There's not $1 number or figure in their annual report. But we break down everything that we do by 300 projects. You can even see how much full-time equivalent personnel there is by project. So let's be clear in looking at the bigger picture as to the amount of information that we produce. No one produces as much information as we do.
Thank you. If I may summarize, we produce a huge amount of, there's at least some parts of the community that feels it is not clear enough for them to make judgment calls on how the money, how the decisions are made. That doesn't mean we're not producing a lot of, or a lot of data. It just means we're not getting message that has to go forward. My own intervention was a very short one. In dealing with the special budget requests from the stakeholders, ACs and SOs, the results from last year, distinct lack of understanding of what were in the cases, in at least some of the cases, yes, that the process be modified to allow one-on-one interactions, not on a formal multi-person telephone call, to make sure there is real clarity. Now, we need to be better. Thank you. We need to be better in writing them, but if it's not crystal clear, there needs to be an opportunity for feedback. Danny, and that's the closing the queue.
So just to close on that, we'll work with Heidi to see how we can manage to organize a more direct clarification of the queue.
I'm going to bring up exactly the point Alan was bringing up, referring to the Atlas II recommendations, and we're supposed to be also focusing on FY7. Now that we have an answer on that, that's fine. Xavier, earlier you mentioned the stakeholder calls that were providing details or the webinars that have been going through the website and finding all of the details of the financial year, and I commend you for that. Enormous amount of information indeed, but I can't find any link to... There's some calls in the strategic initiatives, and, well, strategy is one thing, but the finance calls, I can't see. Where are they linked to?
When you say the finance calls, are you talking about the quarterly stakeholder call?
No, the quarterly calls that, right. or the regular calls which your department are staging to explain ICANN finance details, or did I misunderstand this?
So let me spell out what I think we were talking about, and then you'll point out to where your question is. So there is the quarterly stakeholder call, which is not a finance call, but in which the last section is the financial information. There's 40 slides, maybe 10 are financials at the end. And that happens every quarter, and those documents are on the website, and I don't know if you found them or not. The other calls, but it's more interaction in total, and some of them are calls, some of them are face-to-face. So 2 days ago, we had a workshop meeting. That's one interaction. On the 22nd of September, we had a webinar to kick off the FY17 planning. Those are the information that touch point, I would say, whether it's calls or face-to-face that we were referring to earlier. So your question is about which...
My question is whether either of them are archived and publicly available.
So both are. So the quarterly stakeholder call, there's a whole section on the website where all the quarterly stakeholder documents and the recordings are.
I'm talking about the working group ones, the ones that right. You mentioned so, sometimes take face-to-face and some...
Yeah, so we will publish. It's on the wiki, right, Carol? Did we? Yeah, community wiki that those calls are published, are documented and published. So there is the slides for the webinars, and there's also the recording. We thought we had lost the recording on the 22, but we found it. So it's there, and that's where it would be documented.
So thank you. I just then suggest that, and I'm not sure whether there is a policy from the main website, there isn't a link to that wiki. I know that it's a little bit like the back...
No, but that's very good feedback. We'll use that to make sure that we make it clear what link to go to. Thank you for that feedback. That's very helpful.
Thank you. Tijani, last speaker.
Thank you very much, Tijani. I propose that Garth and all member of Large who has questions about the budget, anything about finance, send those questions to the subcommittee on finance and budget so that if we have answer inside our community, we will provide you. Otherwise, we will ask the finance department and answer them. Other thing, Xavier have formed an ad hoc working group composed by the community members about the planning. And this group is open. It is absolutely open. So please subscribe. Please attend the webinars. Please attend the face-to-face meetings. It's open. So if you want to have more information, try to contribute. Try to participate in those meetings. It's very interesting for everyone, even for ELAC, because if there is more people involved in this, it will be better for ELAC.
Thank you, Tijani.
I thank everyone. We are immediately moving in to the large summit recommendation. Just as a reminder, there is a photographer from 1:45, 1345 to 1445. We have sent out message today saying it's tomorrow, but it's today. Tomorrow is today from the point of view of the photographer. It is today, and it is starting 30 minutes and going on for 1 hour, straddling meetings, which for many of us are mandatory, and there's no time to go out.